Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview. Yes, you are here. Your long-awaited date with destiny has arrived. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week. Through the lens of original thought, it's great to be back. I was off in Las Vegas, where everybody is a freak in Las Vegas. Everything in Las Vegas smells like marijuana all the time. That's all. That's what Vegas has devolved into. But it was, at least it was cool. It was under 100 degrees every day, which is unusual for Las Vegas. And it made it almost pleasant, except for the fact that I was working and I was in Las Vegas. And I was not able to be here with my extremely attractive audio engineer, who does not dress up like a freak and show off her new tattoos. Thank you very much. Very much appreciate that. And I wasn't able to be here with you people. And so that was kind of depressing. But hey, we're back and we are ready to roll. We've got a number of crises going on, of course. Crises, the crises du jour, Iran, the border. We may get to some of those. But you hear about those everywhere. So I try to bring you to some things that you may not have heard about. You might have missed them. And things that I think are even more important than the border. And maybe even Iran, but we'll come back to those two. I want to start with an astonishing story. This is astonishing to me from the Justice File. A city in Florida, Riviera Beach in Florida, the city council there agreed to pay $600,000 in ransom to hackers who took over the city's computer system. Uh-huh. Now, I've been hearing about this, various cities there and municipalities having their computers hijacked by hackers and then ransom demands made. This is the first time I've heard of someone who paid it. This is the first time I've heard of a city being brought to its knees by computer hackers and actually paying the $600,000. Now, according to CBS News, the hackers got into the city's system when an employee clicked on an email link that allowed them to upload malware. Yes, yes. And the big problem, I guess, was that the 911 system had been disrupted. The 911 system was disrupted, which means people could get killed, right? So, let's see. Ransomware is the fastest growing malware threat. What happens? They say ransomware is commonly delivered through phishing emails. Phishing with a PH. Isn't that hip? Isn't there a band called Phishing? Phishing emails often appear as though they've been sent from a legitimate organization or someone you know. You know, you get an email from Jeff at work and you open it up. And next thing you know, you're a hostage. Anyway, the emails often entice the user to click on a malicious link or open a malicious attachment. And so this is a precedent. I was having a debate online about child killing regulations with a guy must have been a lawyer. He was quoting, saying stare decisis and precedent and all this, and how we have to pass these laws to regulate the killing of children in order to get this up to the Supreme Court, and then we're going to make abortion illegal after we already said it was okay, but we have to do it that way. Anyway, I haven't given him a final reply. But I think and he touts the fact that we're in a republic. Anyway, I'm just going to send him back a message and say, you are the reason we are losing the republic, genius. Anyway, but let's get back to this. Where was I going with that? Now I've talked myself off track and I don't even know which way I was going. Oh, this is a precedent. Because there's precedent. You can make pretend like there's precedent with stare decisis and all your bogus court decisions, legalizing immoral and things that should be illegal. You can claim all that and claim that those are all that those are all precedents. This is a precedent. Okay, this is the real world. A city has actually paid the hackers the ransom. And believe me, the other hackers will take note. This is a real world precedent. No Latin was needed to make the point. Even uneducated hackers, uneducated criminals who hire educated hackers, I should say. I don't think there are any uneducated hackers. That's what's scary about hackers, is they're generally pretty smart. And that's what makes them dangerous. So here's what needs to happen, folks. If we don't want major metropolitan areas to be victimized in the future, anyone who disrupts a government system that disrupts something like the 911 dispatch system, that person should be put to death. Because only the fear of death will stop these hackers from doing. And when you disrupt the 911 system, that is as good as attempted murder. So there. Problem solved with one or two executions, ladies and gentlemen. But will we do that? No, we will not. Because we've decided to tolerate this kind of stuff. Why? I guess because we're nice. We're just so nice that we've assumed that we have to tolerate some level of criminality at all times. And it's not really because we're nice. It's because our governing officials are godless, filthy, guilt-ridden lawyers. That's why. But let's move on into the peace file. This is a new file making its debut. This week on the Weekly Worldview, this is from the Independence in London. A young lady. Is this a young lady? I can't tell. The name is Denali. D-E-N-A-L-I. I think it's a girl. Denali, 18 years old, allegedly began plotting the murder of her best friend, 19-year-old Cynthia Hoffman, after meeting a fellow named Darren Schillmiller on a chat site online. So I had to stop after I read that, and I thought, she's plotting the murder of her best friend. Maybe the term best friend has a different connotation these days than it did when I was younger. So I never even pondered like hitting my best friend or even insulting my best friend. I mean, not seriously. She's plotting the murder of her best friend, Cynthia, is Denali, after she met Darren. Well, Darren posed as a millionaire online and offered the single mother of one, that would be Denali, 18 years old, offered her millions of dollars, plural, millions of dollars to send him pictures and videos of the killing of her best friend. Pretty creepy, right? I mean, I guess I should tell you, be careful about where you go online. You can end up on the dark web even when you're not on the dark web. This is pretty dark. So the teenager, single mother of one, recruited five other friends or people. I don't know if you could call them friends. I mean, she wasn't plotting to kill them, so maybe they weren't her friends. She recruited five other people to help her and to help her carry out the killing. She lured Cynthia under the guise that they were going on a hike out into the boonies, where her and the five bound Cynthia with duct tape, shot her in the back of the head, and pushed her into the river. Police found Cynthia Hoffman's body 2 days later. Well, all six suspects are charged with first-degree murder. And the Darren, who promised millions of dollars, well, it turns out he's not a millionaire. He doesn't have millions of dollars. He's been charged with conspiracy. Well, now this is... He's been charged, so that the police go to arrest this guy and they find, he's been charged with conspiracy to produce child pornography, production of child pornography, receipt and distribution of child pornography, and coercion and enticement of a minor. I don't know if all this is related to what he did with this 18-year-old, or it's got to be something else going on here. Anyway, the guy's a creep, a real creep, who should be dead. The trial should be over, and he should be dead. When did this happen here? This was, don't get into exactly what it is. It's recent, but a trial like this wouldn't take very long. Let's see. Well, what else can I say about that? Why is it in the peace file, you ask? How does something so horribly grotesque make it into the Weekly Worldview peace file? Because they shout and cry, peace, peace, when there is no peace. And I'm telling you people that peace is gradually being taken from us on many different levels. And eventually it's going to touch you, and eventually it's going to touch me directly. And once it touches enough people directly, then maybe we'll decide to do something about it. But peace is being taken away from the land because of all the bloodshed and because of all the criminal behavior. And it's not that God has to reach down and magically take peace away. It's that people can be convinced now to murder one another for money over the internet by someone they never even met. Because people have fallen so far, so fast. Anyway, that's depressing. Let's do something that's not depressing. Let's go to the Weekly Worldview Hero File, where we pick up on the story of Dr. Daryl Cass. Dr. Daryl Cass is the director of fetal surgery in Cleveland Clinic's Fetal Center. And a report here from FaithWire says, as the debate over abortion and personhood rages on, surgeons at the Cleveland Clinic in Ohio earlier this year performed their first ever in utero fetal surgery on a near 23-week-old unborn baby. The surgery was to repair a spina bifida, birth defect. Listen to how they do this. A cesarean section-like incision is made. Ultrasound is used to locate the placenta and the fetus. The uterus is opened to about 4.5 centimeters, and the back of the fetus is exposed, showing the spina bifida lesion. Surgeons then suture several individual layers of tissue, the myofascia, the dura, and the skin, in order to cover the defect. After the uterus is closed up, the fetus remains in the womb for the remainder of the pregnancy and is ultimately delivered by cesarean section. This was the first time the Cleveland Clinic did it, but this fellow, Dr. Daryl Cass, the reason he's a hero, this fellow, he set up a fetal surgery unit in Houston nearly 20 years ago and has basically pioneered this surgery. Now he's going to other world-class hospitals, and he's setting up these at least the Cleveland Clinic. He's setting up a similar fetal surgery center, and it's just amazing. And you know what's amazing? That it's not mentioned in this article, but many of the children who are born after this type of surgery, they have no scar. There's no scar. And there's also no inflammatory response when the doctors start to suture. There's no inflammation. Anyway, it's just amazing. It just goes to show how amazing God's creation is. And it also goes to show how resourceful human beings are to be able to do a laparoscopic surgery inside a uterus and preserve the life of the mother and the child. It's phenomenal. It's uplifting. And it gives me hope for the future of humanity for just a moment, just a brief moment in time, because then I return to the news. With reason number 1,197 to get or keep your children out of the government schools, a 25-year-old school teacher has been charged with 36 counts of gross sexual imposition against students in his care. Gross sexual imposition, I'm not sure what that means. It sounds gross, though. 28 alleged victims. This fellow worked at Clear Creek Elementary and Springboro Intermediate Schools there in Ohio. Police have had the opportunity to review just the past 90 days of security footage at the school, and so far they've found 36 charges against this, and they're still rolling tape on this guy. The prosecutor told reporters that there are recorded instances of physical interaction between Hopkins and 88 first grade female students. 88. One of the little girls, he convinced one of the little girls that they were going to be married when she got older. He's in custody and awaiting arraignment. And you know what the creepiest, sickest thing about this story is? Is that this guy will be a free man again one day. Unless he commits suicide, he'll be a free man again. I just got an alert on my computer before I came down into the bowels of the boiler room here at the McBurney compound. A sexual predator just moved in 7 miles from my house, convicted of sexual assault on a child by a person in a position of trust. Yeah. So a person in a position of trust, that should be like every person when it comes to a child. every person is a person in a position of trust with first graders and little children. So, this fellow who just moved in 7 miles from the McBurney compound, he was convicted of sexual assault, and he's a free man. He's walking around. I might have bumped into him at the store today. And this guy will get out. And that's as sick as what he's doing, the fact that he will once again walk the streets a free man someday. Oh, but he'll be on an offenders list, and we'll be able to keep track of him. Isn't that wonderful? Well, if you've listened to The Worldview for any amount of time over the past 20 years, you know that there is already a very effective method for tracking child sex predators. Yes, you engrave their name in granite. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. After getting creeped out by that story, is it possible I could find a less creepy, just something not so creepy? Here we go. This is interesting. This is from the Real Science file. From statnews.com, Joshua Weinstein of the Broad Institute over there at MIT and Harvard spent the last 6 years almost single-handedly working to create a DNA microscope. I said a DNA microscope. Yes, this shows not only the locations of DNA and its cousin RNA in a cell, but also precise nucleotide by nucleotide identity of each molecule. Now, I know for many of you who matriculated in the government schools, there's several words there that you have to go look up right now. But go look them up, because this is interesting stuff. We can actually individually recognize the nucleotides on the strand of DNA. And folks, well, I'll just continue to read. Now, electron microscopes, as you may be aware, they can also see DNA in cells, and DNA sequencers can determine the nucleotides that it's made of. But this new DNA microscope is the first instrument that simultaneously reveals both, and without any specialized equipment. Well, except the DNA microscope itself, I guess. Well, listen, they say that DNA sequencers have become so common in biology labs that they don't count as specialized anymore. It's like having a microscope on hand or a beaker. That's how sophisticated science has become. It's fantastic. DNA microscopy can determine the location and identity of antibody receptors. And these are molecules on a tumor that immune cells attack, and it can identify these and more. Weinstein, who has so far used it to image human cancer cell lines, and plans to apply the technology to tumors and the immune cells that infiltrate them, he said, which might one day guide immunotherapy. It will one day guide immunotherapy. Folks, if we can keep civilization from falling into the hands of the madmen, immunotherapy is going to cure, well, everything eventually, if given enough time. Everything. It's pretty amazing. Anyway, the Broad Institute has applied for a patent on the invention, and science continues, immunotherapy continues, and it's all very exciting, and it's not nearly as disgusting as having to analyze the latest convicted pedophile at your local public school. It's just... And now, here we go. From the Queering of America file, a Lake County, Florida church is planning to hold a 3-day Make America Straight Again event. It's, well, they're trying. This is the attempt of a Baptist church to lash out and fight back against the avalanche and onslaught of perverts. The pile of rolling, thundering perverts rolling over the country. One Baptist church in Lake County, Florida has stood up and said, no, make America straight again. Yes, the pastor there, his name is Patrick Boyle. He says, look, this isn't a normal lifestyle, and we are adamantly opposed to it. The Bible tells us that it's wrong. And he says the government should arrest them, try them, talking about homos, and if found guilty, execute them. Okay, Pastor Boyle. Listen, just a little tactical advice, having been in this battle for many years. Just, I would leave out the part about executing them. Because we are at a place in society right now where you can't even say they should be arrested. I mean, people think you're crazy. If you even assert that it's wrong, first of all, you lose 75% of your audience, because 75% of people, for whatever reason, seem okay with men defiling themselves, destroying themselves physically, psychologically, and spiritually. And so just to say that is well, anyway, but I would just leave out the execute part. I would just leave that out of my public pronouncements. Stick with Make America Straight Again. That's a pretty good tagline. I'd stay with that. And then I'm never afraid to acknowledge that this type of deviant pervert lifestyle is not only sinful, but criminal. I'm with you on that, my friend. I would just leave the punishment to someone else to elaborate on. That's all. Not that I disagree with the fellow. Okay, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying tactically, if you're out there in the fight. He also said this. He says he doesn't advocate that private citizens kill or hurt homos. No, only that society should make it illegal. That's all. And he says, listen to this. He says, it's been illegal in many countries until just a few years ago. Hey, I wonder if this guy's listening to the show. He's either listening to the show, or he's one of the few Baptist ministers who's actually read the Bible. Imagine that. And knows a little bit about history. That's it. That's all you need. If you just know a little bit about history, it's obvious that this type of behavior has been criminal behavior in every civilization except a few right before they collapsed. Just that's it. Okay. Here's what he says. Finally, to add insult to injury, Pastor Patrick Boyle of Revival Baptist Church in Orlando says, quote, we're asking for a normal lifestyle of a husband and wife and kids sitting around the dinner table. But somehow we're the ones who are weird. That's right. So what he just said, a husband and a wife with kids sitting around the dinner table, that's considered strange these days. Or, you know what it is? I think people actually hate normal people now, especially the deviants and the perverts and the ones who advocate for them. They hate us. They hate the idea that we sit around our dinner table with our kids enjoying life and talking about something other than deviant piles of perverts and what they're up to. They absolutely cannot stand it. It drives them crazy. And you know why? It's because they're not normal. They're deviant, and they're generally miserable just under the surface. All right. Now, meanwhile, we go from the Queering of America file to the Queering of Vermont file, which doesn't take much in Vermont because they're all a bunch of strangers up there. Strange, strange people up there in Vermont. Vermonters, they call themselves. Mm-hmm. Health insurance regulators in the state of Vermont are planning to tweak Medicaid rules so that transgender youth no longer have to wait until they're 21 to seek, listen to this, what the Burlington Free Press calls a sex change operation. They call it gender-affirming surgery. So when you're actively using a surgical procedure to change someone's sex 180 degrees the other way, The Burlington Free Press interprets that as gender-affirming surgery. I think it's gender-denying surgery. At the very least, it's gender-altering surgery. At the very, very least, it's complete insanity. Complete insanity. Gender-affirming surgery. So basically, you got a bunch of creeps and molesters there in Vermont who want to get the kids trannied out by the time they're 14 or 15. Why do you think they want to do that? Well, I don't want to get into why, because it's really disgusting, criminal, and creepy. But anyone who advocates this sort of stuff should be arrested. They should be put on trial. And if they are convicted, they should be punished to the full extent of the law. That's the way you say it, Mr. Patrick Boyle. Pastor Boyle, if you're listening to the show... That's how you leave out the part about executing them, because that scares all the snowflake people out there, which seems like there's a lot of them. People get all, who's the latest snowflake who got all hurt and bothered? And what's his name? The guy from New Jersey. He was the mayor of Jersey City or something. Spartacus guy. I can't even remember his name. Joe Biden said something and Spartacus was all hurt and almost tearing up because I don't know him. Anyway, you all know who I'm talking about, and nobody can remember his name because he's never going to be anybody beyond the mayor of Trenton or whatever he was, which he didn't even deserve that. Spartacus is all. He'll be remembered as that moron with the Spartacus. He was all crying because Joe Biden said, I don't even know. Let's move on. Let's go back to Vermont, where the perverts put in, they've proposed this new rule that eliminates an age minimum and allows youths under 18 to get surgeries with informed consent from a parent or a molester. A parent or a guardian. I apologize. 50% of Vermonters under, listen to this, listen to Vermont. It's one of the, wasn't that one of the original 13 colonies? That's not live free or die. That's New Hampshire, right? There's not much difference between Vermont and New Hampshire. I suppose unless you ask the New Hampshireites probably don't want to be associated with the Vermonters. 50% of Vermonters under 18 rely on Medicaid for health insurance. That's pretty pathetic, Vermont. Half the population is on government welfare for health care. For crying out loud, how does that happen? Anyway, Dr. Rachel, who runs the transgender health clinic, and could be a man, for all we know. Listen to what she runs. The Transgender Health Clinic at the Community Health Centers of Burlington. In the capital city. No, Burlington's not the capital of Vermont, is it? We were just doing a quiz of state capitals with our kids. And I don't know what the capital is. Anyway, Burlington's like the biggest city anyway. So Dr. Rachel over there at the Tranny Health Clinic, she says the changes would be, quote, enormously positive for transgender people in Vermont. Especially individuals in their late teens, which are my favorite. Oh, no, she didn't say that. I made that up. You know that's what all these pervs are thinking, though. You know why they want to. You know what they want to do. You know what they are. Bunch of perverts. All right, now let's move on to O.J. Simpson. O.J. Simpson joined Twitter last week, promising in a video that he had, quote, a little getting even to do, unquote. That's right. Simpson tweeted for the first time 25 years to the week after he chopped his ex-wife's head off and slaughtered the restaurant worker who was bringing her glasses. June 17th, 1994. We all remember, right? We don't know how many people are following OJ on Twitter, although I'm sure that news will come out soon. He gained thousands and thousands in the first few minutes. Thousands and thousands of followers. But back in June of 1994, about 95 million people tuned in to watch O.J. Simpson drive his white Bronco. And listen to how the Washington Post reports this. 95 million tuned in to see whether Simpson would surrender, clash with police, or kill himself. And that is so true. Because isn't that what we were all thinking as we watched the white Bronco go down the highway? Has he shot himself yet? Has he shot himself yet? That's what I was thinking. Anyway, 25 years ago, the Washington Post says, 25 years ago, O.J. Simpson held enough cultural cachet that his travails drew the attention of millions around the world. Today, he is a novelty act. But he's not a novelty act. That's the thing. O.J. Simpson, not unlike Charles Manson, who recently was dispatched to hell by natural causes. But just like Charlie, O.J. Simpson is a lingering reminder of a justice system that is now just a system. It's just broken, that's all. That's what O.J. is. And the Washington Post can choose to call him a novelty act. And perhaps in his daily affairs, he is something of that. But O.J. Simpson was a watershed moment in the history of this nation as it circles the drain on its way on its way to somewhere lower than it is right now. And I must admit that I'm a little bit nervous because when O.J. Simpson says he's got a little getting even to do, I hope he's not still mad at me for burning his football jerseys along with my pastor and radio host Bob Enyart back in... Gosh, when did we do that? I guess that was 1999. You know O.J. wasn't happy to see his Buffalo Bills jersey and his Heisman Trophy USC jersey go up in flames. And now he says he's got a little getting even to do. So I'll be looking over my shoulder, and hopefully O.J.'s not going to bring his novelty act anywhere near me. I'm back. I'm Doug McBurney. I'm your host. I'm joined in studio by my extremely attractive audio engineer. So glad to be back. So glad to be back. And yeah, I'm not really scared about OJ. Well, there you have it. Another reminder of just how broken everything is. Do we all remember how shocked we were when that all happened? I was born in Buffalo, and O.J. Simpson was the closest thing Buffalo ever had to, like, someone who ever amounted to anything. Has there ever been anyone else from Buffalo who ever did anything?
Yeah, the guitar player.
Oh, yeah, the guitar player there for old Billy Sheehan. See, he never killed anybody so far as we know. But anyway, O.J. was... Anyway, I remember how shocked I was. But you know what? What I'm about to read is more shocking, I think. At least to more people who weren't into football or O.J. This is a really disturbing symptom of where we are as a nation. Breitbart reports that top executives for almost 200 companies have signed a letter that says killing innocent children is essential in order for people to be successful in their businesses. So 200 of the top companies in America say that killing inconvenient, unwanted, innocent people is essential to keeping the mechanisms of industry, keeping the wheels of industry running smoothly. Now, they use the euphemism abortion, but what they're talking about is killing unwanted, inconvenient, or embarrassing people who are a lot smaller and weaker than them and who they can kill before anyone finds out about it. I mean, except God. See, God knows. Yeah. So the letter was written by Planned Parenthood, and then signatures were solicited from leaders of industry. It's The letter says in part, restricting access to abortion threatens the economic stability of our employees and our customers. It's bad for business. It impairs our ability to keep our businesses thriving day in and day out. The letter appeared as a full-page ad in the newspaper of record, the New York Times. Planned Parenthood, NARAL, and the ACLU have formed an axis of business a coalition of business executives to maintain the legality of murdering innocent, inconvenient, embarrassing, unwanted people. I mean, let's face it. They do have a point. What if the boss wants to seduce a married woman in the office? I mean, without abortion, that could be disruptive. You know, if things didn't go well. And then, of course, you've got women. How else are they going to claw their way to the top of the corporate ladder if they find themselves inconveniently pregnant? I mean, you have to get off the ladder to have the baby, and that could cost your next raise. It could cost your next salary. Your next promotion, right? So as you're clawing your way up the corporate ladder, you need to keep all the tools in your toolbox. You need to know how to step on people, crush people, stab people in the back, and when necessary, murder people. It's just good for business. And forget the bosses. What if workers just want to fornicate with each other? Isn't that good for business? Fornication's always good for business. And inconvenient pregnancies, those can end up embarrassing people and putting people in uncomfortable situations. So we want to make available to the average worker just the option to murder an innocent, inconvenient, helpless, weak person who might embarrass them or get them in trouble. Got to keep the wheels of... And so, folks, this is why the free market without the fear of God is dangerous. Because here's 180 of the top companies in the country acquiescing to the desires of a bunch of blood-soaked child murderers just for a buck, because they think this is good for their PR. So without the fear of God, the free market is dangerous, and there's really nothing that can control the free market other than fear of God or fear of man, right? That's the only thing that can control the free market. Fear of God, you can still have a free market. Fear of man, you no longer have a free market. Whoever you're afraid of, he controls the market. You know, like in China, Xi Jinping, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, and I don't really care if I am. Xi Jinping runs the economy because everyone's afraid that if they get out of line, he'll kill them or disappear them or ship them off to an internment camp. So there is no free economy in China because of the fear of man. Only with the fear of God can there be a true free market. And I'm afraid, at least among these 180 companies, along with Planned Parenthood, NARAL, and the ACLU, they're no longer free, as a matter of fact. I mean, they think they're free, and they act like they're free. And everyone around them, it looks like they're free. They're participating in the free market, but they're not free. They're now slaves to this right here. And they'll be held to account one day. They'll be held to account. All right. Now, from the Vain file. Vain. V-A-I-N. Oh, no. I'm going to make this the Vanity file. Let me change this on the fly, folks. One thing about being the chief executive officer is that I can change it on the fly. This is from the Vanity file, and it features Donald Trump, oddly enough. Donald Trump said in his, he did a speech this past week, was it? It was recently. It was announcing his re-election campaign. And he said, quote, virtually, should I try to do a Trump? I listened to his speech, so I'm kind of getting it down a little bit. Virtually every top Democrat also now supports taxpayer-funded of abortion right up to the moment of birth. Even after birth. Republicans believe that every life is a sacred gift from God. That is why I have asked Congress to prohibit extreme late-term abortion. Unquote. Okay, so I won't do that again.
It's okay.
No, I apologize. I won't. For whatever reason, I can't do Donald Trump. But anyway, I'm not sure if Donald Trump was listening to himself, or maybe someone else wrote the speech. Someone else who was schizophrenic. But he actually said every life is sacred. He invoked the name of God. And then he said he's only going to prohibit extreme late-term abortion. Now, I've heard the term late-term abortion. And I believe that's generally understood to mean the third trimester. But he says he's only going to prohibit extreme late-term abortion. I think that's like the last 10 minutes. I really don't know what he means by that. But here's the one thing I do know, Mr. Trump, is once again, you have invoked the name of God over your policy toward child killing. And I am telling you, Mr. Trump, God hears you when you do that. He notices you. Most of the time, Mr. Trump, God doesn't notice you because you're not that important to him. But when you do this, oh, he notices you. And anyway, so this is strike two, Mr. Trump. Strike two. I'm going to call you out on this. Don't do it a third time, Mr. Trump, because if you do it a third time, there's going to be trouble. There's going to be trouble between me and you. And I don't mean physically. You're a lot bigger than I am. But I'm talking about spiritually. There's going to be trouble between you and I, spiritually and philosophically is what's, yeah. Meanwhile, we move from the Vanity file featuring Donald Trump to the Personhood file featuring the Wascom, Texas City Council. Uh-huh, yeah. And down there in Wascom, Texas, they're the first city in the nation to ban abortion, declaring themselves a sanctuary city for the unborn. Hey, maybe these folks are listening to the show too, along with that Baptist pastor out there with the Make America Straight Again. So the city council voted unanimously to approve an ordinance to make abortion in the city a criminal offense. And believe it or not, folks, there was a legitimate reason for this. It wasn't just them standing up to do this to make a statement. Even that would be good. But what's been happening is over in Shreveport, they shut down an abortion clinic. And with Louisiana, Alabama, and Mississippi making it very, very difficult for anyone to open an abortion clinic, abortion providers may be considering Wascom right across the Texas border to be an ideal location for a clinic. And so the city council just proactively decided, we are not going to let these butchers set up a child killing center here in our town. And so they voted to make themselves a sanctuary city. Now, the ordinance will not bar an abortion clinic from moving to Wascom, but if they do, according to the mayor, they'll be breaking the law. So this would be interesting to see them try to build one and then to see the sheriff kick in the door and drag the abortionist out by his ankles. Anyway, the resolution was modeled after one passed in Roswell, New Mexico, although Wascom, Texas ordinance makes it the first city to actually ban abortions. The one in Roswell just said, we don't like it. We're a sanctuary city, but it didn't really have any teeth. They didn't make it a violation of the law. Anyway, Wascom City Council vote, according to Right to Life East Texas Director Mark Lee Dixon. Dixon said the Wascom City Council's vote has had a ripple effect across the state, and people everywhere have been reaching out wanting to know how they can follow in the footsteps of Wascom, Texas, and outlaw abortion in their city. Well, I think this is just as good a way as any to try to stop the killing of innocent people. I mean, we've been waiting on the Supreme Court for 35 years. Maybe we should try something else. I'm all for doing it on a local level. And then challenging the abortionists to come in. Because I want a conflict over this. It doesn't necessarily have to be a physical conflict, although I'm open to that. It could just be an ideological conflict, but there needs to be a confrontation, a conflict, and someone needs to win. And it needs to be the good guys, the people who don't want to kill the innocents. That's who needs to win. But the question is, how do we instigate the conflagration? And it's not going to be by electing Republicans. and hoping for Justice Kavanaugh to be the swinging final decision they're going to overturn. That's never going to work, folks. No. There has to be a genuine civil conflagration over this. And when it comes to pass, I hope enough of us are ready. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's so good to have you with us. Sanctuary cities, sanctuary cities. I like that idea. I'm for them when it comes to the rights of the innocent to live. Now, meanwhile, let's go to the criminal government file where Candy C. DeBaca here in Denver won a runoff election against former Denver City Council President Albus Brooks, promising that she will implement communist policies, quote, by any means necessary, unquote. That means she's willing to kill people. By any means necessary is a famous line from the communists, meaning we are ready to take up arms and kill people. You know what, though? This lady is probably too stupid to even know what that means. She doesn't even know what she just said here. That's probably our saving grace against her, is she doesn't actually understand what that means. Anyway, she says that her election began a movement toward more progressive policies. And here we have a quote from here. We have a quote from her. This is Candy C. DeBaca. She says, capitalism by design is extractive, and in order to generate profit in a capitalist system, something has to be exploited, like land, labor, or resources. I believe in community ownership of land, labor, resources, and distribution. And whatever that morphs into is, I think, what will serve community the best. And I'm excited to usher it in by any means necessary. How cute. Anyway, we know what it morphs into, you stupid communist. It morphs into Venezuela, which is where you should be deported to right now. And if you believe in community ownership of land, then I want to come over to your house and stay there tonight and watch TV and eat some of your food. Do you think she would let somebody do that? I don't think she would. That's because she's a liar and a hypocrite. Just a warning to Candy C. DeBaca that communism leads to poverty and human suffering, not to mention the fact that God will damn your soul to hell forever to stop you from implementing communism where he lives. So keep that in mind. That's the bigger point, Candy. All right. Meanwhile, from the rich liberal guilt file, The Guardian in London reports that human destruction of the living world is causing a frightening number of plant extinctions. That's right. It's not just the animals. It's the plants. And this is according to scientists. We can't really argue, right? Because it's according to scientists. That's right. They say that 571 species. This is from scientists who have grants for the first global analysis of the issue. The government grants part I inserted there because most of us don't realize that these so-called scientists make their living on government grants promoting political ideas more so than really scientific ideas. But they say 571 species so far have been wiped out, just wiped off the face of the earth. Then that's just since 1750. The true number, they say, is likely much higher. Of course it is. It's probably much more catastrophic than we think. They say that the plant extinction rate is 500 times greater now than it was before the Industrial Revolution. And this was also likely to be an underestimated. Yeah, we don't really know, but we're pretty sure it's worse than we even think. So if you felt guilty about consuming and living and driving and breathing and emitting CO2, if you felt guilty about that before, you should feel about 500 times more guilty right now. They say the number of plants that have disappeared from the wild is more than twice the number of extinct birds, mammals, and amphibians combined. It's terrifying. In fact, I have a quote from one of these scientists, Maria. Maria says it's frightening. It's frightening because I think this is all a gross underestimate. Let's see. So they say a sixth mass extinction of life on Earth is underway, according to some scientists. And you know how smart those guys are. They're so smart that whenever they talk, there's an echo. That's how you can tell they're really smart. They say 1 million species of plants and animals are right now at risk of extinction. Well, I mean, if you want to look at it, every species and every plant is at risk of extinction. I mean, I suppose you could say that. It is a possibility. In fact, I think that's what we need to start telling the kiddos. Every species is under threat of extinction all the time, and it's your fault. You eating, breathing, driving, horrible person. So the 9-year-old kid's looking up like, what did I do? I just wanted to go to baseball practice. I didn't want to destroy the world and kill all the animals and the plants. They're scarring these kids for life with this garbage. Let's see. And according to, let's see, who is this according to? Oh, well, I guess this is, we'll just have to attribute this to the same scientists. The main cause of all this destruction? Yeah, human activities such as farming. Farming, it's evil. Did you ever look at those farmers? I always knew they were evil, driving around on their tractor, feeding the planet, feeding all the hungry people. They had ulterior motives the whole time. Little did we know that they wanted to destroy the planet and kill all the animals and all the plants. How did they do that? By growing all the plants and the animals. Because they really wanted to destroy them all. All right, so that's that. The rich liberal guilt file. When you're so rich and you write for a rag like The Guardian and you produce nothing of any value and you've never produced anything of any value to anyone, yet you make six figures a year and you eat out at a restaurant every night and you drive a car that costs over $100,000, you start losing your mind with guilt because you know you're worthless and you know that you are harming everything, and pretty soon you start to just project that out onto other people. But it's really the scientists and the authors at The Guardian and the leaders of all these eco charities that, where their bank accounts have become so fat and they're so guilty and they're so destructive of everything that is good in civilization that they're projecting that guilt out onto us and out onto our children because we want to have a cookout and drive to baseball practice. All right. Meanwhile, we go to the war file in Phoenix, Arizona. Phoenix, I said. Drayvon Ames, 22-year-old young man, and his fiancée, Aisha, along with their two young daughters, visited a Family Dollar store. Unbeknownst to the parents, one of the little girls shoplifted a doll from the store without paying for it. Okay, now first of all, Drayvon, after you've had two daughters with Aisha, I'm not going to let you get away with calling her your fiancée anymore, okay? There's a number of things that we could call her, But fiance doesn't get by with me, okay? That's all. And second, how do we know that the shoplifting was unbeknownst to the parents? I mean, the only word we have to go on is the parents. The girl who allegedly shoplifted it was 4 years old. How does a four-year-old shoplift? How does that happen? I think maybe mom and dad helped a little bit. I don't know. I'm not going to accuse anyone. Anyway, listen to what happened. Police were tipped off by a store employee just as the shoplifter's car was leaving the parking lot. Police followed the car and eventually cornered the vehicle in the apartment complex of the family's babysitter. Wait a minute. Okay. Note to the authors at NPR, where I downloaded this story. A 22-year-old punk and his baby mama is not a family. That does not qualify. Okay, maybe you let him get by with calling her a fiance, but that's not a family, okay? A family is a man and a woman married, dedicated to raising their children. That's not what we have here. This is some dude and his baby mama at the Family Dollar. That's what we have here. But let's leave that aside. They eventually cornered the vehicle, and then there was a standoff. There was a standoff where the police... What's that? The 4-year-old was not the one who led the standoff. That, I believe that might have been Drayvon, the 22-year-old. So the police are basically saying, get out of the car and put your hands up, and they're saying no. So what do you think happened? Eventually, the police pointed guns at them. Why? Because when the police tell you to put your hands up and you don't, they get scared and suspicious, and eventually they will shoot you. But look how NPR put up the headline. Police draw gun on family after child takes doll. Well, there's a little bit more to it than that, NPR. There was a standoff. The police say that they thought the mother had something hidden under and they couldn't see it. And so what are they going to do? They're going to point a gun at her. Well, anyway, the cops got so scared they started screaming profanities, which I'm against. Cops should never scream profanities. But they basically said, you're going to get shot, you're going to get shot, put your hands up. But they peppered that with all kinds of profanity. Why? Because the cops matriculated in the government schools too, which is really scary. But anyway, the reason the police pointed the gun at the slut and her pimp and their two alleged daughters, who we don't even know the paternity of any of these people, the reason the police pointed a gun at them wasn't because the girl shoplifted the doll. It was because the police are behaving as if they're in a war zone, because they essentially are. And if a cop tells you to put your hands up and you keep your hands where he can't see them, you might get shot. And at the very least, you're going to get a gun pointed at you, as well you should. Police said they feared the mother was hiding something or was reaching for a gun because she wouldn't put her hands up. That's why they pointed a gun at it. All right, let's move on. More from the war file. We go to Boston, Massachusetts. A woman tried to carry 4 knives onto a plane at Logan Airport. This is just... she put her knee brace... So she put her knee brace into the x-ray, and when the TSA officers asked the woman what was inside her knee brace, she laughed. And then they found 4 large kitchen knives artfully concealed in her knee brace. Now keep in mind, she was a British citizen. She was a British citizen boarding a flight to Paris. And so the 4 table knives were confiscated by the TSA, so we can all breathe a sigh of relief. And you know, you just know every TSA agent who has ever groped a disabled grandmother is sharing this story with all of his coworkers, saying, see all the groping? You never know. This lady had a knee brace. Anyway, did any of you see the video of that fella who charged through the x-ray machine and just started punching TSA officers? Did any of you see that video? I saw that on the local news last night. And I just have a confession to make, and I just want to get it off my chest because it's been eating away at me, is that I know what the young man did was wrong, but right when he came through and he knocked over the first TSA agent and he landed the first punch, I was with him. I was like, yeah! And now I feel guilty about it, but I'm just going to confess, okay, that just for that moment, it was a gut-level thing. I don't know, and I'm ashamed of it is what I want to say. I'm ashamed of it. And I'm sorry. All these other stories I have are just depressing or gross or murder-suicide, or suicide-murder, or attempted murder-suicide. I just really don't have... All right, I'm going to end with this from the Real Science File. A volcano that was previously classified as extinct in the far east of Russia has woken up. That's right, they're saying now it could produce a massive eruption, similar to the one that wiped out Pompeii almost 2,000 years ago. Yeah, this is the Bolshaya Udina volcano, and it was considered extinct, meaning it had not erupted in a long time. Is that what that means? I thought extinct meant it's not coming back. But it turns out when they say a volcano is extinct, that they don't really know if it's extinct. Now they're saying, when I was in high school, an extinct volcano meant that there was no chance it could ever erupt again. But now they've had to shift that to it is unlikely to ever erupt again, meaning it could erupt again, meaning we can no longer use the word extinct. So could we possibly move on to a different word? Anyway, the only reason I read the story is because I'm into volcanoes. I think they're interesting. And just to make the point that how old's the Earth now this week? 4.35 or 4.42? A 5.3-something billion years old. Anyway, a planet that's over a billion years old should not have extinct volcanoes waking up. They should all be extinct. Just the normal dissipation of heat energy means that in a billion years, you couldn't have volcanoes. I'm sorry. I'm not buying it. And earthquakes, too. Everything should have settled down by now. So don't be a sucker and buy into this idea that the planet's a X billion point 3245 whatever old. It's a small world, and it's not very old either, as an old friend of mine likes to say. And that's it for the Weekly Worldview, folks. I want to thank you for tuning in. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, at RealScienceRadio.com, and at American Right to Life. And, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview studio, should the Lord tarry, we'll return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.